Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
As a dear friend once said, it's an important conversation, and I'm glad we're having it. It's Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson filling in for Janae Agwumike today. You hear Amber around here on ESPN Radio, hanging out on the weekends, kind enough to hang out with us today. And Amber, we have been given a lot today. We're going to get to talk to Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, in about 10 minutes. As Amber, we found out Devontae Adams might really be one of the best friends any NFL player has ever had at this point.
He is ride or die.
Ride or die. So the latest on Devontae Adams relative to the situation going on with Aaron Rodgers. We'll also talk to NBA champion Bobby Portis from the Milwaukee Bucks, who's going to join us in about a half hour here. Find out how all that nice champagne tasted for everybody at the victory parade in Milwaukee. But Amber, we've also got a lot of volatility in the world of college football right now. Texas and Oklahoma put out a statement, declaring their intention to give up their media rights in 2025 when the Big 12 media rights become available again there. They set out in wax now what we've heard talked about and whispered about for the past week here. Their declaration of wanting to leave the Big 12. We know they reached out to the SEC about joining there. And Amber, it all roads kind of lead back to this conversation anytime something like this comes up. Big conference realignment, all these changes that feel seismic, like this feels like a bedrock shaking type deal because of the names involved here. When you hear these hypotheticals thrown out here about, you know, massive super conferences here, major realignment, the Power Five breaking away, it does always come back to, do you think any of this is actually good for the sport of college football? Like, outside of lining pockets, is this something that's going to make this not only a better product for people to watch, but also a better product for people to play as well?
Well, I think people will be quick to say no, but I also think that's people being resistant to change and being concerned about it and scared of it. At the end of the day, I do think that there will still be rivalries in college football and that we'll still all watch and that we'll still all love it as much as we currently do. I don't really know what this changes from the fan perspective. If anything, if we're talking about just this initial move, and we can have a conversation about real super conferences or everybody joining one conference later, but if we're talking about this initial move of Oklahoma and Texas, Mike, joining the SEC, why would that be bad from the fan perspective? All you're going to do then is see them face better competition, and the entire SEC, particularly when it comes to Oklahoma, gets better because of that competition. So I think that's even more fun from the fan perspective. If you're just a casual fan, I would think that you love this. It's more high-level games to watch. If you are not a fan of the SEC, you also might kind of like this because it also feels like a situation where the SEC might eat itself even more than it already currently does, right? Like, they're adding Oklahoma to the SEC. That's going to stiffen everyone's competition inside the SEC, and the SEC already has that problem. And then if you're expanding the college football playoff picture, you're hoping to get one of those first round byes because you win your conference and you're at the top of your conference there in the SEC. That's a much harder road for Oklahoma and the SEC than it would be had it stayed in the Big 12 or even Texas if they can ever get their program together. So I think that really it heightens all of that competition. Ultimately, I feel like that's good for the fan, but I know that's a unique perspective because I do think most people think it's bad for college sports.
Well, and I think this is interesting, which fan, because you talked about the casual fan, and this has always, to me, been the tension for two sports, college football and Major League Baseball, where there's this weird tension between a sport that came up as a largely regional entity, especially college football. It's off the beaten path towns, it's spots that aren't big major markets normally that house a lot of these teams and draw most of the eyes in that, versus what, again, it's become a national brand. Stuff like the BCS, the college football playoff, especially as more money's flooded into the sport, has made it something that feels a little closer to the NFL that way, where we have these big, broad, sweeping national conversations. Hell, a lot of them we lead here on this network as someone who's bringing so many people the college football playoff. And so, Amber, I think that's the tension in all this. Is I could say, yeah, for the casual fan who might see the SEC dominance and just have that be the hook. We know the good teams. We like knowing the forces of good and evil in any sports story that we tell. But if you're looking at the larger fan of college football who might already be sick of the way they view powers consolidated basically in the hands of a few schools, the same people that complain that it's just Alabama versus Clemson part whatever in the CFP every year, I feel like that crowd might look at this and say, how is that going to do anything but give me more of those same outcomes?
Yeah, but if we're talking about, and again, an expanded college football playoff picture, which obviously is not official, but we do expect that goes into effect, what, 2023, maybe 2025, when those TV rights deals expire. If, in fact, it is expanded to 12 teams, there are those rules where if you win your conference, you get the by the top four ranked conference winners, all that rule, all those rules that we talked about when that story first broke. And it feels like if there's a whole bunch of schools that are really, really good in one conference, then that makes that actually more parity, because there's only so many of them that could find themselves in that situation. You're only going to have a certain amount, what, six teams? It wasn't it that, you know, six conference winners and then six at-large teams. So where does that leave a lot of the other teams in the SEC if we see an expanded college football playoff picture? I actually think it could increase the parity in that sport rather than decrease it.
Chinay Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golick Jr. and Amber Wilson talking about major college football realignment in the wake of Texas and Oklahoma declaring that they intend to leave the Big 12 at the end of the 2025 season when the Big 12 rights come up for television at that point. Amber, I'm not sure if I fully agree there, because the place that we're getting to now with all this is we've had a year where we had two teams in a four-team playoff. We came close to it again last year with Texas A&M and Notre Dame, basically a coin flip for the four seed in the college football playoff. We see the way the national media, everyone else, values the SEC. We have a lot of highly ranked teams in there in the preseason polls every year. It tends to be a lot of high-ranked versus ranked matchups. And we also tend to see, whether it's the College Football Playoff Committee or the AP pollsters, them not punished an awful lot to losing to what we consider good football teams. And so now, if OU or one of these squads has two, three maybe losses in that, but it's to number five LSU and number two Alabama, I could see in a world where we've got 12 teams where the SEC's putting four in on a given year pretty consistently in a way that just feeds more salt to the ire of fans that are looking and sick of hearing about SEC supremacy. So that becomes the difficult part to me, is I think there might actually be room for more invited to the party for a conference that we have a ton of respect for, that adding Oklahoma would only jump that up.
Well, this certainly makes the SEC more powerful. Don't get me wrong. The rich are getting richer here. But there is this idea, like you said, that there's this incredible SEC bias. If you take an expanded playoff model, that 12-team model, over the last 7 years, the conference actually with the most teams that would have made that expanded playoff model would have been the Big Ten. It would not have been the SEC. And if you go to a world here, Mike, with super conferences where everybody's in the SEC, then all of a sudden, I don't know if the SEC seems quite as special. If it's just the SEC and the ACC, and maybe if the Big Ten and the Pac-12 and everybody else starts getting involved in combining, if you're talking three conferences like they talk about with these super conference models, then is any one conference really that special? Because we're talking about so many teams in the conference. But yes, you are right. In the interim here, before an expanded playoff picture, and when we are just talking about these two programs joining the SEC, the rich are getting richer, the SEC will be even that much more powerful.
And Amber, I think I've heard a bunch of people say this. I know, I think I heard Stephen Godfrey, a college football reporter, say this on the podcast Split Zone Duo, that this move's probably not made unless there's a belief that that 12-team playoff is absolutely coming. The interesting part that I saw Bill Connelly bring up in a great article on ESPN Plus, you guys can check out, that outlines a lot of the tentacles of this decision, is part of the proposed expansion model was the top six seeds would be the highest ranked conference champions. That's what left it open to groups, you know, conferences in the group of five, like the American or the Sun Belt, teams that we saw last year like Coastal Carolina to get in. If the SEC, which we know Greg Sankey and that conference swing a lot of weight in these conversations, if they're wanting to make sure they maximize the number of teams that get involved, do you think they come to the table and say, hey, that whole top-ranked champion nonsense, top six champions, why don't we nix that and just keep doing this the way that we've been doing for the college football playoff? So we'll see what kind of effect this continues to have overall, as Oklahoma and Texas will not be renewing their Big 12 media rights. One of the first formal steps towards their move, reportedly, conversations being had with the SEC. Now, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. offering coverage options as unique as your business. Progressive covers companies of many sizes and specialties. Learn more at progressivecommercial.com. Coming up next, as we've gotten news from Adam Schefter around Aaron Rodgers and his future this season, what does it tell us about 2021, not only for the star quarterback, but for one of the best receivers in the NFL? That's next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. If you've ever wondered what championship champagne tastes like, stick around in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk to Bobby Portis from the Bucks. I mean, Amber, Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, co-hosting for Janae Agumake today. Amber, Bobby Portis feels like one of those guys that we came into this season not really, you know, sure what his role would look like, and ended with the season where he may never pay for a drink in the state of Wisconsin ever again.
Oh, he has absolutely earned that right at this point. A very exciting young player. They definitely found something there in Bobby Portis. It'll be fun to hear his experience in winning that ring.
Yeah, and just his relationship with the city. He became such a crowd and fan favorite for that squad. But before we get there, we head to the Goodyear Hotline now with tons of news about Aaron Rodgers coming from Adam Schefter today. Let's talk to our ESPN NFL analyst and host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast, Mina Kimes, who's with us now on the Goodyear Hotline. And Mina, is it safe to say this was probably the most expected outcome, as Aaron Rodgers, according to Adam Schefter, now appears very close to re-entering training camp for the Green Bay Packers?
You know, I always thought he was going to come back, because I just could not bring myself to believe that Aaron Rodgers in his prime was going to walk away from the game. And I also didn't think Green Bay was going to give in to a trade. But this particular outcome, which we're still waiting on, you know, more details, but it seems, based on what Adam has told us so far, that Green Bay has agreed to void the final year no matter what and give Aaron the option of having a trade next year. That is something that it wasn't really a foregone conclusion. And I actually think it's the best possible outcome for both sides. Aside from Aaron being traded in this season as he wanted, this is really not too dissimilar from what Brady got with New England. You know, he got to be a free agent, which is essentially similar to what Aaron would get after this year. And I think for Packers fans, not only do you get one last year at least of Rodgers, you also get a tradable asset. There's going to be some sort of return on that return on him if you trade him after this year, instead of him walking away for nothing. So I think you're pretty happy today.
So Adam Schefter was reporting that Aaron Rodgers' contract would be adjusted with no loss of income this year. It would give the Packers more cap room. But he was also reporting that there'd be mechanisms put in place to address Rodgers' issues with the team. Do you have any idea what that means? Like, does that just mean giving him the freedom to decide where he wants to go in 2022?
Yeah, that's a great question, Amber, because, you know, we've heard, okay, Rodgers wants more of a voice, but it's almost August. It would be one thing to hear he wants more of a voice on personnel going into the offseason when a team has its choice of free agents and, you know, ahead of the draft. At this point, there's not that much you can do, and it's not like a Brady situation where there's a Gronk waiting in the wings. So one suspects it would have to be perhaps if there's any sort of marginal trades or free agents to be made, Rodgers might have some influence there. And alternatively, it could also just be about internal methods of communication and sort of how decision-making happens throughout the course of the season that we're not privy to.
Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson talking to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes on the Goodyear Hotline. Mina, Schefter tweeted not long after that if the Packers officials sign off on their willingness to trade Aaron Rodgers and that agreement's finalized soon, it would give him a lot of that freedom. It would also free up some cap space for this upcoming season, which meant that for them, Davante Adams would also now be willing to listen to any contract discussions the team would like to have. Davante Adams would be open toward a deal. Would it surprise you if Davante Adams signed there long-term, knowing this might be a one-and-out situation with the quarterback that's helped him get to this point?
No, it wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, the Davante situation is so different insofar as I imagine he certainly would rather play with Rodgers for the rest of his career as any wide receiver would, but I also think the issue there, at least unless there's something we don't know, has been more about the money. You know, Davante Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL. at the moment, and he is certainly not paid like it. It would be easy enough for the Packers to get a deal done, except for DeAndre Hopkins, who maybe the second best wide receiver in the NFL, got an extension last year from Arizona that kind of blew the market wide open, and you know, raised his value to $27.5 million APY. It's not really $27.5 million per year because of the nature of the deal and how many years were left, but I guarantee you to Devontae Adams, it looks like $27.5 million a year. So the Packers are going to have to get some work done to make that work and make their star receiver happy. Fortunately for them, Rodgers restructuring, and we'll see what the details are, could make it a little bit easier, and they're a very cash-strapped team.
I have to ask you to pivot here. ESPN is now reporting, John Barr with ESPN is reporting that 10 women have filed complaints with the Houston Police Department against Deshaun Watson. A couple of those women apparently are not the same women suing him in civil court. What does this mean for the Deshaun Watson situation and the Houston Texans?
Well, you know, to me, there's the question of kind of like, what does it mean? What should it mean? And what does it mean to the NFL and any team that would be interested in a trade? And those are all different answers, because for what you just told me, the fact that, you know, there's still a criminal investigation going on involving many women, and again, this is not just civil, it's criminal in this case, suggests that this is a pending case, right? Like we are waiting. The NFL is waiting for this to unfold criminally. And yet we are also hearing reports that there are teams interested in trading for Watson, who still doesn't want to be in Houston. Now, to me, those are two concepts that are very difficult to square. The notion that a team would be willing to part with, you know, not just a draft pick, but multiple draft picks for a player who's been accused by, you know, dozens of women of sexual assault and is still under investigation. It's pretty hard to conceive. I guess it's not surprising given some of the things that have happened in this sport over the past, you know, forever, but it is still pretty shocking.
It's certainly a shocking case, and we'll keep updating you on information as it becomes available. But again, Amber giving the latest there that 10 women have now filed formal complaints with the Houston Police Department, two of whom were not involved in the now 22 civil allegations against Deshaun Watson. Check out Mina Kimes on NFL Live. Download, subscribe, rate, and review the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast. Mina, thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, guys.
Awesome stuff from Mina. But coming up next, let's head to Titletown, USA in Milwaukee and find out how the love affair between Bobby Portis and the city of Milwaukee got going. Next, here on ESPN Radio.
Chené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Chené Agwumike today. We are presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Hoping to talk to Milwaukee Bucks forward and NBA champion Bobby Portis here soon, coming off of their great championship run here. But it's time for Summer Games News and Notes, brought to you by California Almonds. Representing your country or representing your trivia team, almonds are a natural fuel for the best you. California Almonds, own your everyday, every day. And Amber, the thing happened again here as we look towards the Olympics and whatever version of it people are consuming, basketball, soccer, a lot of the sports that we tend to latch on to here as a country. We do so well in the women's national team. We usually are used to the U.S. men's hoops team dominating, but we took that L to France. Like, Amber, is this something that matters as much as it used to you? Because I don't feel like, especially after we had those couple of exhibition losses, that we're reeling in the same ways that I thought we would.
Well, I think the change here is that the entire world has gotten a whole lot better, right? So it's a very different scenario than it was in the 90s or in the early 2000s when we were super tuned in to these teams and our every wish hung on the hopes of the Americans winning the gold in hoops. And now the entire world has kind of caught up. I mean, over the last few years, Mike, all these other countries have really worked on their FIBA programs, and the Americans are over here playing 5 games in 13 days with a bunch of dudes who have never practiced together. I mean, you're talking about players who showed up the night before the game. At 1 a.m. they got to the hotel before they have to roll out and go play their first game to try to medal in these Olympics. It's an impossible task, I think, that the Americans were up against because of all that, because of the COVID protocols, because they lost players to COVID. They lost players temporarily to the health and safety restrictions. They lost another player to injury, you know. So not to mention the guys who were, by the way, just in the NBA Finals. Speaking of Bobby Portis, the guys who were just in the NBA Finals 2 seconds ago. So with all of that, and then with the competition getting so markedly better, I mean, so much better. And we're familiar with these guys. You know, we're familiar with Luka when he goes and plays for Slovenia and does what he did the other night. It resonates here in America in a way that it didn't used to.
No, it's certainly become very different, but I think you're right. That scheduling is something we have to keep in mind, because there were a few guys on that roster that just got off the plane to Tokyo from that championship game between the Bucks that we saw not too long ago. And so let's get to the champion here. We talked about it, and we have Bobby Portis now with us, Milwaukee Bucks forward on the Goodyear Hotline, an NBA champion, which, Bobby, I still have to imagine feels very good to hear as many times as you probably have in the last week.
Absolutely, man. Just having an opportunity to impact winning. Have my mom there, family and friends, she experienced it with me, man. It's a beautiful thing, man.
How much champagne have you consumed, Bobby, over the last week? How much champagne? Be honest with us. It's okay. We won't tell anybody.
Man, champagne, alcohol, all of that, man. Man, I've been having a blast. I'm not going to lie, man. Being in the league 6 years, man, working hard as I can, trying to find a niche in this league, find a team that I can really stick on. I think I found that, man. And it's fun, man, just to play with these guys. Everybody's so unselfish. We all play for each other. You know, we play defense. We're the better team, man. And, man, it's fun.
Bobby Portis with us on the Goodyear Hotline. Heard you talk after the game on the court about what this team has meant to you in your NBA journey. When did you know that you had found a home? When did it feel like you were onto something special with this group in Milwaukee?
Man, day one, man. When I first got there, obviously coming into a situation, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. And with me, you know, I was just trying to be the best I can be in my role. But then being around my teammates, they made it easier on me on the court. Just how selfless everybody was, unselfish everybody was, playing together, then having great coaches. Coach Bud and his staff, they do a good job of putting guys in position to succeed. And they did that with me, and I'm truly blessed and thankful for the opportunity and ride and journey this year, man. I had a blast this year.
It seems like also that city has really, really embraced you. That environment during the finals was a really special one up there in Milwaukee. How aware were you guys of what was going on in the Deer District and all the fan support even outside of the arena?
Man, it was a great boost for us, man. Starting the season off, we had zero fans. We were playing with no fans. It was tough, man. You had to really love the game. I think you kind of saw who really loved basketball at that time, man. You know, the passion that you play with and things like that. And, around March, you know, we got like 200 fans like our first game in March. And then they started doubling and tripling, you know, as games progressed. But to have 17,000 fans inside their pack going crazy, and then to have 60, 70, 80,000 fans outside, that's just unheard of, man. The Bucks fans do a good job of giving us that extra boost. And it was definitely needed. And, man, I'm just so thankful and appreciative of him.
Chenan Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Amber Wilson talking to NBA champion Bobby Portis from the Milwaukee Bucks on the Goodyear Hotline. And, Bobby, we've seen all the accolades, all the awards for Giannis Antetokounmpo. What he's accomplished in this league at the age of 26 is almost unheard of. But for you, seeing him every day behind the scenes, the guy you know in that locker room, what separates him from so many of the other players in this league?
Just how humble he is, man. For a guy to have two MVP awards, you know, he's the Finals MVP now, Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know how many times he's been an All-Star MVP. Just that alone right there, that's like unheard of, like you said, at the age of 26. So just how humble he is every day, how unselfish he is as a basketball player. And then off the court, he's an even better person. I think that's what's unique about him, man. He really cares about his teammates. He cares about everybody, man. And that's one thing I love about him, man. He's humble at what he does, man, but he's always hungry.
Milwaukee Bucks forward Bobby Portis joining us. Bobby, people call you one of the hardest working players in the league. Where does that work ethic come from for you?
It comes from my mom, man, actually. Having a mom that worked tirelessly to take care of me and my three little brothers, she went as hard as she could every day to make sure that we had the best. We moved around from house to house from time to time, but I never seen my mom complain, never seen her worry. She just always worked as hard as she could. So I definitely got that hard working quality from her. She taught me how to work hard. I seen it firsthand. And as I started getting older and started having a passion for basketball, it kind of just assumed the role.
Bobby, you talk about the hard work that went into this championship run from you, from other guys on this team, the Pat Connaughtons of the world, Drew Holiday stepping up. We saw a lot of that, but we also saw a lot of heat on your head coach in Mike Budenholzer here. For you guys in that bunker with Coach Bud, what's he meant to this team? Because I feel like for the outside world, a lot of people pointed to him and had a lot of questions along the way.
Yeah, I think it's always easier to blame the coach when a team doesn't have success and things like that. I mean, that's always the way out in this league. I think you just have to know that. It's your job, not going to be your job forever, whether it's a coach or whether it's a player. There's only a handful of guys that's going to coach the same team every year for 20 years. There's going to be only a handful of guys that play for the same team for that amount as well. So with us, man, Coach Bud's a great coach. He's done a great job with me individually, just instilling that defensive side in me. At first, my quickest way on defense was trying to find my quickest way back on offense. That was my defense back then. But, he kind of just, really instilled that in me early on. Told me if I want to play more, then I have to play defense. And he really, really pushed me to the end. I love everything about him. Our recovery days, all those things that, help us be the best, best versions of ourselves, man. I think on the outside looking in, he kind of gets a bad rep. People say this and that about adjustments or whatever they say, but he won a championship. You can't take that from him.
Yeah, he is a made man now. You can definitely not take that from him. Bobby Portis from the Milwaukee Bucks joining us. So, Bobby, I know it's only been a week, but are you already thinking about a repeat?
Right now, I'm just soaking it in. It's hard not to, though, not going to lie. All the stories you hear about a team winning and repeating and doing this and that. In a perfect world, that's what we all want. But at the moment, I'm just enjoying time with my family, my friends. Just got back home on Saturday evening. So it's like almost my third day here now. So just relaxing a little bit. I have a big decision to make coming up. So just trying to get my mind off of that and just relax, man. It's been a long season with all these COVID protocols and testing twice a day for the virus and things like that. So just trying to take some time off now.
Well, enjoy that time off, Bobby, knowing that you are a 2021 NBA champion. Congratulations again, and we appreciate you giving us some time today.
I really, really appreciate that, man. The journey is always sweet, man, when you win.
Absolutely. Bobby Portis and the Milwaukee Bucks, winners indeed, sitting on the NBA mountaintop here. We appreciate getting to catch up with him a little bit after all that champagne went down, and hopefully settled in a good spot for him. But coming up next, in a year of Major League Baseball, where we've talked about so many no-hitters throughout the sport, especially in the first half of the season, we will take a look at one that went horribly, horribly wrong next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Amber Wilson. Our thanks to Bobby Portis from the Milwaukee Bucks, the world champion Milwaukee Bucks, for joining us on the Goodyear Hotline in that last segment. And Amber, I know a lot of people, I think I saw some people taking umbrage with the idea that we say the world championship, even though right now our U.S. men's basketball team hardly looks like they might be actual gold medal champions of the world in the Olympics. I feel like we're not going to bring that up with Bobby because he's riding high on this one.
Yeah, he is still, listen, for now, he's definitely the world champion, and he may remain the world champion the way that Team USA has been playing.
Yeah, listen, we talked about it some in the last segment here. I'm not all that concerned with the dominance of the NBA as the foremost league in the world because they've accomplished what Adam Silver and so many others wanted, which is a much more global version of the game to where we recognize a lot more of the guys that have been giving us buckets both in the exhibitions and now in the real life games as Team USA took that L to France not too long ago. So
it doesn't take anything away from any of these guys right now playing on Team USA, even when they lose to a good French team, by the way, that obviously is led by NBA players. It doesn't take anything away when these NBA players are losing to other NBA players. And certainly I don't think it changes any of their stature in the association. None of us are saying, oh, well, now maybe Dame's not that good or KD's not that great. I mean, we all know how great these guys are, and it really, frankly, probably doesn't matter what happens in the Olympics. That being said, it would still be nice for them to win one for America.
It is interesting. I do genuinely wonder how much people still care about supremacy in this particular area, because as these sports have gotten so big, and as the Olympics, I mean, maybe in comparison, people aren't looking at this gold medal as much and saying, this is something we really need to feel validated. I know in the past, we've had the Redeem Team after the Dream Team, all these things in response to kind of that feeling of being jilted and losing out on something that feels like ours, but maybe with just the amount of content. I mean, Amber, we've talked about this a lot in the last year. For so many people who consume so much content, in some ways, sports has taken a back seat. We've kind of reevaluated priorities. And so maybe the gold medal just doesn't mean as much as it used to people, especially not in this particular sport.
Well, I think you made an excellent point earlier when you were talking about the competition and the recognizability of the athletes on these other teams that were playing. That matters when you're watching Fournier and you're watching Gobert and you know who these players are, and that's who we're losing to. I think it has a different connotation than it used to when it was sort of America against the world, and we didn't really know who the world was because the globalization of the sport wasn't what it is today. Now you see the best players in the world. You see the Lukas and what he's done for his team with Slovenia. And of course, these other guys are playing more free on a lot of these other teams. And then you have an American team who's all trying to come together at the last second with no practice time and no chemistry and get it done against these other FIBA programs that have really stepped up their game over the last few years.
There's a definite group project analogy to be made here about the way that me and some other people I know used to approach that kind of setting. But this is not about a time to indict my academic career. Chinay Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. This is time for the MLB Weekend Recap brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Credit Karma money, progress starts here. And how about this for an update? We had the Red Sox and the Yankees playing, and Domingo Yerman was dominating the Sox for most of the game. The right-hander was striking folks out, walked off the mound with a no-hitter intact and a solid lead. Well, after that eighth inning, all the wheels fell off, and the Red Sox somehow managed to storm back, Amber, to win 5-4 on Sunday. In a year where we've talked about so many no-hitters, at times the devaluing maybe of the no-hitter during the first half of the season, this is a reminder that, man, there is no such thing as a sure thing, especially not in a game as long as baseball.
This makes it seem like the no-hitter still matters here, right? But there's certainly no such thing as a sure thing, especially for this New York Yankees team. I mean, Aaron Boone called this a gut punch, and they've had a lot of gut punches this season. They're 51-47 after 98 games with a run differential that looks way worse than that record does. This Yankees team is in serious trouble, and I think you saw that this weekend at Fenway when they lose 3 of 4, and they do it by coughing up leads. And you can blame the bullpen, but they certainly have a problem offensively on that Yankees team, Mike.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than looking up and seeing the thing that was supposed to be your strength, what you had built with that batting order, not living up anywhere close to the hype or the money that you spent on that. So certainly a lot more questions for the folks still in the Bronx when it comes to the Yankees after that failed bid at a no-hitter by Domingo Yerman. 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Coming up next, as we look back towards the NFL, it's been a busy day full of news from our ESPN NFL insider, Adam Schefter, about Aaron Rodgers and his future with the Packers. Not only his immediate future, that looks like it could come as soon as tomorrow as the Packers get set to open training camp, but coming up next, what Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers resolving things means for the 2022 season and the larger future around the Packers. Next, here on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Chinay and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.